What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Hunt Tough podcast. I'm your host, Michael Curl, and this is the first ever episode of my new podcast. In today's episode, to start the whole show off, I have a guest on that I've admired for a long time. His name is Sydney Smith. If any of you guys have heard of him, he is a hunter and a marathon runner from Utah. And his story is very inspirational. And the reason I wanted to have him on as my first guest was because I think that some of the trials and struggles he's been through and overcome in his life work very well with the idea that I'm trying to put together with this Hunt Tough podcast and the Hunt Tough brand that I'm trying to build. And we had a really good conversation. The audio isn't amazing because I had some issues with my microphones and I ended up having to record the whole podcast off of my phone rather than my computer with the headset and everything else. But it turned out pretty clear. I'm not going to lie, the podcast is kind of all over the place because it is my first one and it's going to be something to get used to. And it's just going to be a whole journey for me trying to put together this show. So anybody that's going to be following along, just work with me and hopefully we'll grow in this together. Sid was great to talk to. We covered a lot of different things. We covered his personal story. We covered some of his hunting background, some of the things he likes to do. And I think it was a great conversation. It ended up being almost an hour long, which is kind of where I want to keep these episodes, around an hour. Sometimes they might go a little more, but that'll just kind of be a play it by ear type deal. So hopefully you guys enjoy this episode. Sid is a great guy. It was a great conversation, and I'm sure I'll have him on here again in the future. So enjoy the episode and hunt tough, everybody.
Crossing fingers on this one.
Hey, there you are.
Yeah,
man, this is the reason I hunt and fish, because you don't use computer.
That's all right.
I'm probably the only person I know in their 20s that doesn't know how to use a computer.
No, but I'll tell you this, you'd be the only person ever done a podcast that hasn't figured it out. Everybody messes up, man, or can't get it, or it just depends, like Anchor or Skype or FaceTime, all of it. There's always just some weird quirks that you have to try to connect. So no worries.
Oh yeah, I mean, I initially sent you the link for the podcast off my phone, but when we went on to do it today, I used my laptop, and it's like a whole different format on the computer, and I just cannot figure it out.
No worries.
It's all bad. Alrighty, well, welcome, dude.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
My first episode I'm recording.
I am your first podcast episode?
You are the first one.
Oh, sweet. So I could say whatever I want and you wouldn't know.
I would not know the difference. You're going to set the tone for the next, 5-10 years here.
I don't know if I could take that pressure, because if they don't like the first one, they're not going to listen to the second or the third or the fourth or the fifth.
Oh,
so.
Well, I don't think it would only be up from here, right?
Yeah, I'm going to have to get my A game on. I'm going to have to pull out my little book of jokes or something like that.
Oh, you got it. Well, I really appreciate you coming on, man. The reason I wanted to have you start this all off, because when I started the name Hunt Tough, a lot of people kind of took it as I was trying to be kind of like a Cam Haynes figure, where, you got to be like a hard ass in the woods and everything else. And that's actually not why I thought of that name. The reason I thought of that name was because in my first year of hunting, which was actually last year, was the first year I picked up a bow, I went through so many speed bumps and so many stumbling blocks, and I just thought, you gotta overcome a lot more in this than I realized. So when I came up with the name Hunt Tough, it was more about having to overcome stuff that comes in your way. And sure. I figured you are the best person to talk about that. And I'll kind of let you explain to everybody why that is.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate that. No, I just do my thing, man. I'm nobody special. I just do my thing.
Yeah. So why don't you kind of give me a little introduction to who you are and kind of what makes you who you are and some of the stuff you've been through.
Sure. Yeah. I guess to start off, I grew up in Utah, born and raised on the Wasatch Front, a little town called Provo. Not so little anymore, but I went to school at BYU Idaho. Mm-hmm. And got my degree in hospitality management. Met my wife there. I started running hotels. I grew up with a disease called Charcot Marie Tooth, which is a muscular dystrophy. And it's just something I lived with and battled with. It's a progressive disease. So as I got older, it got a little bit worse.
Mm-hmm.
I had a few kids. We now have 4. But, I'm just, you know, an average dude. I love to hunt. I love to fish. Mm-hmm. I love to hike. I love to do anything, you know, pretty much outdoors. Mm-hmm. And then about age 30-ish is when things were kind of going downhill physically for me on that disease. And the doctors had to do some amputations on my left and right feet. Mm-hmm. And I became a double amputee below the knee.
Okay.
And that, you know, there's lots of highs and lows in that process and lessons I've learned and battles I had to deal with, but different things out of those ashes, lots of new doors opened up, such as my love for running.
Mm-hmm.
In prosthetics and taken to the extreme of triathlons, and where now I'm training for my first Ironman.
Mm-hmm.
And then hunting has actually taken up another notch, where I've gotten into it and doing it pretty much year round. Bow hunting, scouting, shed hunting, 365, everything's hunting.
Yep, I get that. So is you having to sacrifice your legs, is that kind of a normal outcome for this condition, or did you have an extreme case?
Yeah, I had an extreme case. Most people haven't heard of the disease because it's a fairly minor disease on the muscular dystrophy spectrum.
Okay.
It's actually one of the more common ones, but there's so many different subtypes out there. Mine's a rare one that is very aggressive, and it pretty much deteriorated my feet where I couldn't walk.
Okay.
For a while. And so, mine was more on the extreme side.
So when you found out you had that condition, you having to have your legs removed was not even something on your radar?
No, not at all. I had a feeling deep down that there's got to be something drastic or something that's got to be just a different approach.
Mm-hmm.
Because prior to then, growing up, I had about 10 different surgeries. Start at age 12, off and on my feet, different, bone structure, screws, bolts, plates, mm-hmm. and muscle transfers. I wore different kind of braces, things that try to fix it. But being that it's progressive, it just continued to get worse. And there wasn't a real, there's no cure for it, but there wasn't a real solution.
Okay.
That was fitting my lifestyle.
Yeah. So as the condition kind of progressed and got worse, did you ever reach a point where you like weren't able to go out and hike or hunt or anything at all, or were you able to do it right up until you had the surgery and then you had your recovery time and everything else?
No, believe it or not, I continued to go outside the best I could. I wore these giant braces out in the mountains, but as far as I could go, or the ability of hiking, it was very limited. Mm-hmm. So I kind of transferred or transformed into a professional road hunter.
Yeah, I've done my fair share of that. Yeah, that's crazy, man. Because I mean, I know whenever I'm out either hiking, hunting, shed hunting, whatever it might be, I mean, something that can ruin my day is it starts raining. And then, you know, you see people like you who are having to overcome that, and it really puts it into perspective for you, like, what someone like me has to be thankful for and what I consider, you know, a huge speed bump to get over really isn't that huge of a deal. And, you know, it helps someone like me to think about someone like you and think, well, hey, if he's able to do it, then I have no excuse.
Mm-hmm. So it's, I appreciate it.
It's a bit.
I appreciate that
inspiration to me.
Well, thank you. I'll tell you, you know, when you say about, you know, motivator and so forth, and you mentioned the word gratitude, you know, I think this whole experience, you know, a lot of people tell me that, you know, I'm, you know, just makes me grateful for what I have. Well, this whole experience made me grateful for what I have.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, it, things that I took for granted. And I think that's part of the reason why I do what I do at such an intensity or a high level than the average Joe, because I just don't want to take advantage for the, you know, the gifts that I still have.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if it's able to motivate others to do the same or something similar along the way, I mean, that's a bonus too. But, you know, I think motivation that we see, you know, either on Instagram or through other people, it's nice, but it's, if you think of a flame, all that is just kind of a kindling to the fire. What really keeps those, you know, bigger logs going or takes it to the next level or it holds on to that consistency is yourself. And self-motivation is actually the truest form of motivation. And, you know, it's what I've came to know myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's really amazing, man, that you've been able to reach the place that you're at. Cause I mean, I know a lot of people, not like, you know, anybody I know personally, but a lot of people, if they had gone through what you went through, they would spend the rest of their life sitting in a wheelchair, wondering what they did to earn that.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that you've been able to come out of it and get into everything that you were into in the first place. And in a lot of ways, be able to raise above the level that you were at. Cause I mean, were you into like the marathon running and whatnot in the first place?
No.
No,
I didn't. My first 5K race, or even my first time running a mile, was after I lost my legs.
Wow, that's crazy. And for anybody that is either not familiar with your story, how is it that you're able to run now? Like, what is allowing you to do that? If anybody doesn't know kind of how that works when you've had an amputation.
It's a long process. Running is probably the most advanced thing an amputee can accomplish or get themselves to. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of work that goes into it. So many amputees I've run or ran with or know that want to run, and even myself in the beginning assumed that, well, all you need is a running leg and you can run, mm-hmm. which is false. There's a lot to it. Just like any athlete, you have to train, you have to do, you know, be able to have the perseverance to keep going, because, you know, when it comes to running with a prosthetic, it requires a lot more mental strength as well as physical strength.
Mm-hmm.
There's no advantage. I mean, it's a huge misconception that those springs give you, you know, the, like you're walking on a cloud and bouncing around like Tigger.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case at all. And so for me, it was just kind of one step at a time. Obviously, I had to learn how to walk,
mm-hmm.
and then be able to get into a prosthetic that I'm able to take some abuse to my limb, and it hurt, and it just required to just get through the pain.
Mm-hmm.
But man, it, you know, it's paid off, obviously, and to the point where I enjoy running. Like it's something I look forward to doing any chance I get. And it just, you know, it's requires balance and different muscles. Like, for example, because I'm a double, I don't have a limb that I can use as a balancing tool. Mm-hmm. So I use my hips and my knees, which then in turn can fatigue me faster in running because I'm, you know, so focused on balancing on those little springs, which the contact pads about the size of a deck of cards.
Oh, wow.
And so with those stabilizing muscles, fatiguing running becomes, you know, quite a bit more challenging.
Mm-hmm.
But I am not to discourage anybody that may be listening to your show that's an amputee. There's a lot of technology out there that's stepped it up as far as getting you trained or me more accustomed to wearing a prosthetic that allows you to be more physical.
Yeah, and it's amazing that they've come that far with the technology, because I mean, if I had heard that somebody had lost their legs, I would have never assumed that they'd be running after that. I would have never even thought that.
No, me neither.
It's pretty amazing that they've been able to come up with something like that or some prosthetics like that that allow you to do that kind of activity.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And I remember the very first time I saw you on Instagram, I think it was a picture of you hunting, and I saw the prosthetics that you were wearing, and actually the first thing in my head was, wow, that's awesome. He doesn't have to worry about waterproof boots. That's amazing. That's like one of the hugest issues for me when it comes to hunting is trying to find a pair of boots that actually keep water out.
I'll tell you that, you know, I'm so involved in hunting and different, and I'm a gear guy, and you know, I love to hear stuff and what's new and what people are using and any recommendations, especially, you know, hunting in the backcountry. But one of the topics I just zone out is when people start talking about socks and boots and mm-hmm. warmth and how to keep your feet, you know, in good condition, and different moleskin and Leuco tape that they put in areas. I'm so glad I don't have to deal with that.
Exactly. And I mean, when it comes to your prosthetics, I mean, I know you wear shoes on them, but it probably really doesn't matter what kind of footwear you wear, right?
No. I mean, yes and no. When it comes to backpacking, I like to have kind of a rigid foot just because I don't, or shoe, because I just don't mm-hmm. want my foot be sliding around too much. But the lighter, the better, because the heavier the boot, the more muscle requirement for each step comes out of my hip flexors as I okay. lift up my quad. So if that's more heavier, then it fatigues that muscle. Also, the heavier the boot, the more my prosthetic will start sliding down. So if it loosens up or has any like a piston in a car effect, then I can get blisters there. So usually something light, like a trail running shoe with a good tread, is what I like to use for hiking.
Yes, so you really have to think about some of the same things that I would. It's really not that much of a relief on you. You still have to think about, you know, what footwear is going to cause what kind of fatigue, what footwear is going to cause what kind of traction. So...
Mm-hmm.
So what hunts did you go on this year? I know you did, if I remember seeing right, you got a mule deer in Utah. Is that right?
Yeah, this year I arrowed a mule deer.
The picture of it. It was still in velvet, right?
Yes. One nice thing, you know, about Utah is that their archery season's a little bit earlier than, you know, Colorado. So you do have a higher chance of finding a muley.
Yeah, it was a really nice buck too. I saw the picture of it, and it had a nice head on him.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, he was kind of cool. It's always fun to, you know, from a distance to, you know, you obviously don't want to look at the rack. You're just trying to figure out the deer's behavior on archery. But, you know, all I saw was frame, and that's kind of what I was going for. And it's kind of cool to walk up and you had a few extra.
Yeah, mule deer is something I've yet to hunt for. In Washington, where I'm at, we only have mule deer on one side of the state. And even there, they're not – the mule deer population is not huge, so hunting them is not the easiest thing in the world, especially archery. So my goal is to get over there at some point and do it. I don't know if it's going to be this year or not, but it's for sure an animal that is a goal of mine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love it. That's what I grew up on, and I don't know. I always battle in my mind, what do I like to hunt better, you know, mule deer or elk? And the answer, I guess, to this is whatever the season is or whatever tag.
Now, I've heard mule deer is actually hard to hunt with archery because they're so in tuned to smell and hearing that it's hard to put a stock on them. Is that true?
The stock process is, yeah, that is harder. However, I find it easier to hunt. Okay, let me rewind. So Utah, during the archery, it doesn't really favor the rut like it does in other states. And so when I say this, when I compared between, you know, hunting with a bow, I would say mule deer is easier than elk when I compare it to Utah, just because of that. So you putting a stock on elk is tough because there's typically more eyes you got to worry about. And there's not a whole lot of rut behavior there is towards the end. But with the mule deer, yeah, their senses are high. However, if you are trying to find a specific buck, I find it easier that way on the archery deer because of the way that you can pattern them. Just be able to know where they are, and you see them in the summer, set up trail cams, you kind of get an idea. And that's kind of what happened with this deer and other mule deers that, earlier in the season, that you just kind of get an idea where they're at. Once the velvet comes off, they get pretty smart, and they get a little bit more wiry. And sometimes if they're scared or bumps, they don't normally come back. And so I would say that, yeah, there is some things about it that's hard as far as the actual stalking, but to get into a position of a stalk, it's a lot easier than it is on an elk, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I know I always assumed that mule deer would be kind of like any other deer as far as hunting, but when I started to read into it more, I started to kind of find out that they're one of the hardest deer species to hunt, just because they do run in groups as opposed to a blacktail, which is essentially always alone unless it's in the rut, in which case they'll have a doe that they're after or something. But mule deer, I mean, I've seen photos and videos of people hunting them, and they're in groups of, you know, 8, 9, 10. And I've seen guys try and put a stalk on them, and it's just so hard because there's so many pairs of eyes, there's so many noses. And usually you hunt mule deer in more flat, open space, so it's even harder to put a stalk on them. And it kind of looked to me like in the photo that I saw of you, that's kind of the land that you were hunting in, was kind of the more flat, open sagebrush type area. I've heard a lot of stories of guys that have to put a stalk on a mule deer and they're on their stomach crawling. And that's a whole new concept for me, because here in Washington, I mean, we're in the thick timber. So, I mean, you got trees, you got brush, and I've never had to crawl on my stomach to stalk anything yet.
Oh yeah. No, I've gotten a few cacti in my hands crawling. It's tough. The terrain is tough, because it's like a sagebrush. You can weave around it, but you know, I'm a bigger guy, and that's not always possible. And there's some areas like through aspens, or, you know, they kind of, you'll get a few sage, because they, you know, the deer love the sage, and that's usually when you can get an opportunity. If you want to get thrown through a feed, through a bed is a little bit different, and sometimes that's the ultimate way, I think, to put a stalk on a mule deer, is just to, you know, watch him where he feeds in the morning, where he goes to bed. That's probably the go-to way of doing it. But, I've had to, I haven't done it yet on a mule deer because I've been, you know, blessed that the deer kind of works his way into me when I've arrowed him. But I had it on a turkey where I tried to get closer to a turkey by going behind a blind, or excuse me, go behind a decoy, and my freaking legs just get in the way.
Yeah.
So I just take them off. I just take them off, and I just crawl.
And you just crawl
with the legs. Know? Yeah,
that's how you get it done.
It's because they get in the way, and the carbon fiber is shiny, and like I just don't want to get busted. But that's just a way to do it, I guess.
So I also remember seeing you. You took a pretty nice elk this year, right?
No, not this year. I took one. I took a cow this year, and then I took a bull the last 2 years. I was unsuccessful on my bull tag this year.
Okay. Yeah, see, and that's actually surprising because I didn't think Utah issued cow tags.
Oh, yeah. Yep, they do. Some of them are over-the-counter. Some of them you have to draw in a couple times. But, no, typically they'll do, you know, you can hunt during the hunting season, like in the fall. Mm-hmm. But every once in a while you can get one in January, which they kind of use it as a depredation tool where, you know, elk will get in the farmer's field when the snow's up on the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they'll do that, but yeah, no, that's one of my favorite hunts is the cow hunt because it's at the end. And it's just, you know, easier way to top off your freezer.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I know here in Washington, you can, as far as archery, almost every unit that you can hunt in, you can take either a bull or a cow. And it's usually only archery that's allowed to do that. And I've talked to a lot of people from other states and they're always like, wait, you shot a cow? I'm like, yeah, doesn't everybody? And I guess I didn't realize in a lot of states you're not able to shoot cows.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah, here you're almost every single unit you're allowed to take a cow. I shot a cow this last year, but unfortunately was not able to recover it. When I took the shot on it, I got the range. I was all set up. And right when I let the arrow fly, she whipped off to the side and it hit her way far back and it drew good blood, but through tracking her and everything else, we kind of saw that she was able to get to a place where she laid down and kind of calmed down and was able to let that wound kind of clot up, and she ended up getting up and walking and we never found her.
Dang it. Ugh.
It was rough because I actually shot her while I was alone. I called her in and shot her all alone. And I was able to get the shot, but it just didn't work out. And I realized afterwards, because I think it was about 2-3 days later, I was shooting my bow with a couple of friends. And they're like, hey, you've got something rattling on your bow. I figured out my quiver was loose. And we kind of determined that was probably what made her whip to the side at the last minute. She probably heard the quiver on the bow right before the arrow hit her. And that was what set her off. So needless to say, I went and got an all new quiver and I was like, well, I guess that'll kind of teach me to check my equipment every time I go out. That was kind of something I didn't really get in the habit of this last year, was completely going over my bow every time I went out, you know, to see if anything got knocked loose the previous time or anything like that. And I saw the importance of it, because that I'm pretty sure that's what made me lose that one. But you live and learn. It was, like I said, that was my first year out with a bow, and it was, oh man, it was all kinds of learning experiences.
I bet
it was crazy. I did end up taking a deer. I shot a doe on the last day of the season. But yeah, I kind of wish I had gotten that elk. We'd have a lot more meat in the freezer right now.
I tell you, that is the worst thing is when when you the years that we don't get an elk, oh my gosh, my wife gives me a hard time about it. And then you want to get cook a nice roast for Sunday, and you're like, oh, I have a mule deer, which I like mule deer, but I think elk is obviously the best. But
oh yeah, elk is by far the best. Have you done anything else besides elk and deer?
This year?
This year or any other year?
I've done, no, really. I mean, this year I went to Texas for my first whitetail, or mm-hmm. excuse me, 2018. I did that. That was my first experience with whitetail. But other than that, it's just been elk and deer. You know, obviously I have the desire to do, you know, the Alaskan or, you know, I've dabbled on the idea with a few friends who are down in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. But I think right, you know, as far as hunting, I don't, the extent that I want to take it, I feel I'm in the position to get to maybe do the hunts that I want to do. But as far as this year goes, 2019, I will hunt and do a few here and there. But my main focus is going to be training for this Ironman. So,
okay,
not to put it on the back burner, just it won't be my priority as it was in years past.
Mm-hmm. And when is this Ironman that you're training for?
It's in November.
Okay.
November 2nd.
Now, I don't know. I've heard people talk about the Ironman before, but I don't know too much about exactly what it is or what makes it such a huge deal. Can you kind of explain that to me?
Yeah, so it's the ultimate distance when it comes to triathlons. A triathlon consists of swim, bike, and run. Your basic triathlon that you see usually in towns and stuff like that is going to be your sprint distance or Olympic distance, where the Olympic distance, you swim a mile and then you bike for 26 miles and then you do a 10K run.
Okay.
And then the sprint distance is about half of that. Then you go into the Ironman 70.3s, which is the next step up, and then you do a 1.2-mile swim, then a 56-mile bike, and then a half marathon. And then the full Ironman, which I'm doing this year, is a 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bike ride, and then a marathon of 26.2 after that. So that's that much of a race in one day requires, you know, a high level of endurance and training. And so that's, you know, I try to balance my life the best I can with work and my family and hunting and doing this, you know, triathlon stuff. And unfortunately I have to, you know, not to sacrifice, you know, my family, which is my priority. I have to kind of back off a few things to allow time to train.
Exactly. Yeah. That is crazy that anybody could work up to that. That is insane.
It is insane, but I'll tell you what, it's you train right or even have a coach or just have a consistent pattern and try the best you can to stay healthy. You could do anything, anybody. I mean, I've seen people do amazing things and right now, you know, where I'm at, I'm training about 11 hours a week and you know, we're still 8 months away. I feel very confident that I'll finish the race. The only thing that really that scares me at this point is if I have some issues with prosthetics, so mm-hmm. or crashing my bike.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the same things everybody worries about is the equipment failure. I mean,
yeah.
But so I'm gonna kind of pick your brain a little bit here. I've been wanting to get into running a lot more. I used to run a lot in high school, but I've been out of it for a while. And right now, I mean, if I went out to jog right now, I guarantee you I would get about 500 yards and I'd be out of air. What's a good way to work up to running, you know, the 3, 4, 5 miles a day from somebody in a position like me?
You know, it has to start somewhere. And regardless if it's 500 feet or less, You got to have a start, and that's, I think, and it's kind of an ultimate principle, or even an eternal principle, when it comes to persistence and staying faithful to something. Mm-hmm. You know, good things will happen, and there will be failures. You know, you'll have some days that are successful. But just like anything, those failures are happen to everybody, and it's how you react to it. Whether you run that 500 yards and you said, I'm dead. This sucks. This hurts. My back hurts. I don't want to do it again. And if you have that mentality, and, then yeah, you won't ever get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, it's all about that mental mentality at first that takes it to the next level. Obviously it's okay to, to start slow. You don't have to, run a marathon a day like Cameron Haynes is, tomorrow to feel like you're at that point. It's just, you can be your own, personal badass to yourself. And so you're going to be that individual that's going to progress. And, mm-hmm. and if you have that persistence, that progression and success will come, whether you're going to have, failure or not. For me, it just started off something small. I ran around the track, and then the next day I tried to run a little bit further and a little bit further. My wife, who's never ran before, she says I'm, inspired her to run after I did my first 5K, and then she did her first 5K, and then she did a 10K, and now she's doing a half marathon. But same thing, she just started off slow and put in a like a 10% each week, as far as distance goes, and to the point where it becomes your body just accept this is the way my life is, and I'm going to just start running. Mm-hmm. And it usually tells you to shut up. I mean, obviously, I'm not a doctor by any means, but you want to be cautious of what your body can or can't do. And mm-hmm. who knows, you may have issues where you can't run. But that's okay. There's other things, biking or swimming or other physical activities that you might be able to do.
Mm-hmm. And one of the big reasons I want to start running again is because right now it's something I can't do. Like if I went out and someone said, you need to go run a mile or two, I physically would not be able to do it. And that fact right there makes me want to get back into it, because I'm somebody that always feels really, really proud when I get to the point of accomplishing something that at one point there was no way I could do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something kind of everybody needs to take advantage of, mm-hmm. because if you're constantly on the road to accomplishing something more than you can right now, that's going to build character. It's going to build strength in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I just see people like you or Cameron Haynes or anybody else that's fully dedicated to running or fitness or whatever it may be. And it makes you a stronger person. It gives you a lot of strength in your character, in your day-to-day life, which will overflow into either your family, your work, hunting, whatever it may be. And I just want to be able to take full advantage of that to essentially become a better person.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. That is one of the reasons why I enjoy doing it. I enjoy the pain. I enjoy the hard work that it requires, because it does teach you lessons that can overflow into other things in your life and mm-hmm. make you a better person. But I'll tell you, Instagram is an interesting thing. Obviously I'm not going to be posting my bad days, but even a lot of amazing people out there, I guarantee you, they have their good days and they have their bad days. So it's, people can't think, oh, wow, look at this guy. He does this amazing thing. I can never do that. Why can't I be as happy as him? Well, mm-hmm. I mean, you're only, for one, seeing the one best thing, and two, you shouldn't be comparing yourself to everybody else. So I think it's important people realize that even though we have, we may perceive as being strong individuals, we have our bad days too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's a very fine line between having somebody as a role model or an idol and starting to, like you said, compare yourself to them and then starting to feel like, oh, I'm never going to be as good as them, never going to be as strong as them. Yeah. And I think social media is weird. It can be a very, very good thing, but it can very easily turn over into being a bad thing.
Oh, yeah. Like,
very easy to turn from using it as inspiration to suddenly using it as looking at what you wish you were or what you think you wish you were.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been there in the past. I've been, you know, looking on Instagram, YouTube, whatever else, and been like, wow, you know, these guys are killing these, you know, 340-inch bulls or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm never going to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of it making me think, okay, what do I need to do to get there? It just makes me think, oh, well, I'm never going to be there, so why even try?
Sure.
So it's,
no, I agree.
It's hard. It can turn on you really fast.
Yep, that is true. You got to be careful. Social media, I love it. It's great to network with people. But yeah, if you get yourself caught up into that stuff, it's can be poison.
Mm-hmm. So, Utah, did you make it to the Western Hunt Expo this last, what was it, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago?
Yeah, it was 2 or 3 weeks ago. Yeah, I was there.
Yeah, that's actually a big goal of mine, is to make it to that, hopefully next year.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of stuff on it, and it looks like quite the week.
It is. It's funny because growing up going to it, I mean, it was just an excuse to go find some cheap camo on sale. but nowadays there's just so many different, I go for a couple of reasons. One, I enjoy seeing, you know, people that I haven't seen or they've traveled, and it's just a great way to network with them, or with social media to put a face with the handle. It's cool. Also to see kind of the new products that are out there, mm-hmm. To get a feel for that. And then just it overall, there's a lot of neat hunts that you could buy, but it's almost, there's a lot of things lately, especially the last 4 years, has been about the hunting lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
It's now not all about hunting in the fall. It's about getting in shape, you know, whether you're using, you know, Mountain Knots products or scouting or different activities for shed hunting or something like that. And on, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, that wasn't even a process that people got into. So, you know, if you ever go out there, you'll notice that the Western Hunt Expo isn't just about, you know, finding cheap hunts or pretty mounts on the wall. There's a lot that has to do with the hunting lifestyle. So those are the things I like about it. And if you do come out next year, one of the funnest 5Ks is the one that Cameron Haynes pulls. And I can't tell you how awesome it is to see tons of people that this is the fourth one I've done. And there's tons of people every year that it's their first 5K ever. And it's so cool. So cool to see them do the race and watch them cross the finish line for the first time. Some guys even get emotional. It's pretty cool. You ought to consider it if you're going to come out.
Oh yeah. I mean, I would love to be able to work up to doing something like that. That'd be amazing. Yeah, you're right about it being a lifestyle. I mean, I was just over at my parents' house last night and I hadn't seen them for a while, and they asked, you know, hey, is there any hunting that you're doing right now? I'm like, no, you know, there's nothing in season right now. And their response was, oh, well, that sucks. You can't do anything. I'm like, no. There's always something I can be doing. there's shed hunting, there's scouting, there's working out with hunting in your mind as the goal. You know, there's always something. And
3D shoots. Yeah.
Yep. A lot of my coworkers hunt also, but they're more the kind of, you know, you take one, maybe two weekends in September and you kind of go out and you drive in the truck, you drink a bunch of beer and hope you see a deer. And they don't understand at all my mindset around hunting. They're like, so what are you? Are you a hunter or are you a gym rat that likes to take pictures? I'm like, well, I'm both. But yeah, no, it's, I didn't even realize until I really got into the archery side of hunting, I didn't even realize that there was a community like this that lived and breathed the outdoors all year long.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was, I had no clue. And when I found it, I don't know, I felt like I came home.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, wow, this is the area that I need to be in, because there's a whole group of people that think like I do. I always thought I was insane because I just thought about it all year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, there's actually a lot of people that do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's also really helpful that there's so many people like, you know, Cameron Haynes, Hush, or any of the other people that do a lot of the social media. They put mm-hmm. out a lot of content for you so you can kind of stay in the mood all year mm-hmm. long. And it's really helpful that there's so many people out there that are out to inspire you all year long, and not just for, you know, the 1 month of September or what have you, where the hunting is actually going on.
Absolutely. You know, I'm an advocate of that. You know, I've had arguments with guys saying, oh, that, you know, those people are the guys that ruin hunting, because now you get these hot kids that watch the, you know, the Hush Boys, and they see this high expectation of what they need to be doing every year. And, you know, they're not going to get that. I mean, mm-hmm. the Hush Boys, I know them well, they work really hard, and they are able to get into some pretty cool areas. And, you know, some of these kids may think that they can do that, and they may do something unethical just to do yeah. that. But that argument is entirely true. I think ultimately what people like that do are the born and raised guys. They provide, you know, obviously something to keep us motivated during the off season, but they make hunting cool. You know, mm-hmm. if kids look at that and they brag about that, and, you know, it's better than them, you know, sending, you know, naughty pictures of girls or to each other, or playing, you know, video games or doing drugs. And if it gets them out in the hills away from those things, then how can you argue exactly. what they're doing is a good thing for the hunting community?
Exactly. And that's actually an interesting thing you brought. We were talking about Hush, and then you brought up all the born and raised guys. I was actually just watching some of their videos last night. And I was thinking, and it never really occurred to me before. I was like, oh, the born and raised guys are one of the only guys in kind of the hunting social media community that aren't super into the fitness side.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting. I'm like, you don't see that a whole lot now. Usually the fitness and the hunting are tied together now, but they don't focus on the fitness side at all.
No.
And I just found it kind of interesting that they focus more on, you know, the elk techniques and the calling and everything else. Yeah. I found it funny that I never really realized that they aren't into the more the fitness, the supplementation, you know. So it kind of shows you don't have to be any one way in order to be successful.
No.
And I think that's good for a lot of people to know.
Yeah, no, I hope people understand that too. I mean, I think at that point it's a choice, because I know lots of guys that are not as physically in shape as I am, and they're extremely successful. They just know they're, you know, they figured it out, or they just have that predator technique. For me though, I like the physical side of things, for one, because I have other activities such as some of the I love to go hiking, mm-hmm. and I like to be in shape, because there are times when I'm not in shape and I'm in the mountains and I have, you know, hunting, and I have, you know, an option. I can go a little bit further, or, you know, I could push, right, hear a bugle or something like that, and your mental strength starts to be tested because your physical strength is drained.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found, you know, that I can be more successful when I'm in shape, because mentally I can handle that that pressure. So I guess it really just depends on your personality, but you don't have to be an elite athlete to be a good hunter.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. All right, man. Well, I think we've come to a good stopping point here. What do you think?
Already? Golly, I thought we were halfway there. We got started out hunting, and now we could go on for hours.
Oh, we could go on for hours. I know. I'm kind of, and that's the weird thing about starting a podcast. I don't really know, like, how long to make the episodes. I mean, I know there's some podcasts I follow where each episode is like 5 minutes.
And
it's like short little things of information, and then they're done. And then there's other podcasts, they'll go on for hours.
Oh, I know.
Like if you listen to the Joe Rogan podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I've watched episodes of his where they're like 3.5 hours.
Well, what blows my mind is, I mean, Joe's amazing. He's the god of podcasts. Mm-hmm. Like, there'll be a 3-hour podcast I'll throw on there. And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to have time to listen to that.
I know.
Next thing I know, I listened to 3 hours of Joe. And so I guess it depends on the topic and the presenter and so forth. And I don't know if you – one of my favorite hunting podcasts is the Rich Outdoors.
Yep, I love it.
And he usually keeps his in like an hour. Mm-hmm. But sometimes he'll get on a topic, one of which Paul Madel, with also known as the Elk Nut.
Oh yeah,
and none of you know he's a gabber. I get it, but some of the stuff he talks about is just so intriguing that you start listening and you're like, man, and his are like 2 hours, and you don't even feel like it's been 2 hours just because they just are so intriguing. So I guess it just depends on the content and where the conversation's going to where. You know how long your podcast goes, but
and I mean I honestly have no clue how this podcast is gonna end up. The reason I started it was because I thought, okay, well, you know, I'm thinking about the outdoors and hunting and everything else all year long, so why not do something where I talk about it?
Sure. No, I'm grateful that you invited me on. I wish you luck on that. I love podcasts, and I've, you know, like I said, I've been on a few. And And I think, you know, the only advice I just make sure you enjoy doing it. Otherwise, it's your audience will tell if you don't enjoy doing a podcast or you feel like you have to throw a podcast out there just to throw a podcast out there. So,
yeah,
have fun doing it.
I'm really looking forward to some of the people I'm going to be able to talk to, and hopefully some of the people I'm going to be able to talk to. And yeah, I've just got to learn. I've got to. Like, I'm sure you can tell by our conversation, I have no idea how to interview somebody. No clue at all.
No, it's you did good. You know, some people that, you know, that I've talked to, they just wing it and they would just gab about hunting. And then there's some that know, like, they know all about me. Like, they know my entire life and, you know, they've done research and stuff like that. And so sometimes they'll gear questions that, you know, that are a little bit more specific. Mm-hmm. Just a mixture of just, you know, shooting the shit and just having structure is probably going to be your success. So,
yeah. And I'll tell you right now, I mean, while I was trying to figure out my computer issues, I was like, okay, he's going to be on here. What the hell am I going to say? Like, I have no idea what I'm going to say. I mean, I've talked to you on the Instagram a couple of times, but I'm like, all right, I'm actually going to talk to him now. And this is my podcast. So what the hell am I going to do? So it's going to be something I'm going to have to learn, especially if I'm going to be getting, you know, people on here that I either follow or are role models of mine. I'm going to have to try to not find words or not know what to say or just say, hi, how are you? Like, please talk to me.
No, that's good.
So it's going to be a learning experience. It's all new for me.
Cool. Well, I wish you luck, man, because it's fun. And you know, I've actually dabbled on the same idea to do a podcast, but it's like my wife said, she's like, you do not need any more hobbies, Sid. You need to not.
Yeah, I get that.
I was like, well, when I picked up the bow, I was just like, why are you getting into archery now? I said, well, I dabbled on it before, but now I'm really into it. It's like, well, you don't need any more hobbies. I'm like, well, it's hunting, and hunting is just a hobby, which is a complete lie.
Yeah,
no. Hunting is a freaking lifestyle, and there's so many to it, like long range shooting, and you know, and hunting different species, and so no. Yeah,
it's way more than just a hobby. A hobby is working on cars. That's yeah, a hobby.
That's true. That's true.
All right, man. Well, I really appreciate you coming on. It was awesome to have you be on the first one, and hopefully we'll talk to you again on here at some point.
Cool. Yeah, I appreciate you, man. Good luck.
All right, man. Have a good one.
Okay, take care.